Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And we're talking to you in the RV Navigator podcast for August 2026, episode 256.
Getting that in right away so that we don't forget to tell you when we're making this podcast.
Because usually we just start babbling.
We are babblers.
It's been a little challenging talking to you today. We planned to record this morning, and our always appreciated lawn crew came back and mowed and blew and made a racket. We are grateful for their help where we live. And then immediately after that, the weather changed, and the very humid air around us turned into thunderstorms and tornadoes and hurricanes.
But at least the smoke has gone away.
Yes.
I'll tell you, this this July has been quite an ordeal with the high temperatures. We always talk about we come back to Chicago because the summers are nice, and they usually are. We don't like the hot, humid weather in Florida, so we come here to those temperatures. But now it's hot and humid, and we got smoke. Have you had smoke?
Maybe we need clouds of locusts and grasshoppers. It's biblical.
This was dramatic. I mean, the wildfires in much of Canada have caused definite smoke in the Chicago area.
And
to the point
much
where
worse for
we
them.
Really could see it and definitely smell it and feel it. And, you know, last year we were off at this time to Alaska, and we did drive through some smoke there on the way to Alaska through Canada, but we didn't actually experience it here in Chicago. So this has been something a little bit new for us. Oh, and in Alaska we didn't notice any smoke at all, which was really amazing. This has been a new experience for us and makes the weather even worse than it is in Florida. We never win anyway. So
I want to thank those of you who took the time to send me some good wishes as I sit here and recuperate from my shoulder surgery. I see on our agenda I'm supposed to report my progress.
We're 6 weeks out.
And I would have to say that my doctor who looks at the x-rays is well satisfied, but the person that is me that is sitting inside this body is still in huge pain and not sleeping very well. So I try very hard to think about other things, and one of the things that helps is to think about good camping memories. But then when we look at these weather forecasts, I want to hear from you guys. I'm hoping that you, unlike me, are all off camping this summer, going somewhere fun. Has the weather impacted you? Does it affect where you decided to go? And were you sorry you went to that place after you got there because of the weather? I know that talking about climate change is politically incorrect, but my memories of the summers when we would go places in our RVs, however big they were, it was much less iffy that we would have a nice experience in terms of the weather once we got there. Maybe I'm sitting around here in the house too much watching TV and listening to the news. And these days, if they have video of something, you're bound to see it because that's what everybody expects these days, including the poor old man who got hurled into the air by the bison in Yellowstone.
Did you guys see that video?
Did nothing wrong. He was in the campground.
In a campground, yeah.
I've seen that video 1,000 times, and every time my heart goes out to him, and I'm glad that he will eventually recover, as will I.
And he seems to be fairly lucky, I think. I don't think he was gored by the horns, and I don't think he was trampled.
Right.
And I don't think he landed on anything
that ground.
Was causing more damage.
Yeah.
So in terms of – but he was just standing there far away from the bison, and boy, I guess that's a learning experience for us all when we see that it really happens. These animals are wild animals, and they are unpredictable, to say the least. Having been in Africa and next to lions and all sorts of other animals, I don't know. Are we just lucky or just, well, I don't know. We've seen elephants turning over cars and for just no reason, and animals charging, and I guess if it's your time, it's your time.
When your number's up, it's
up. So if you haven't seen The Bison, then you might want to take a look at the link that I have on our website, because this is in a campsite, and a 65-year-old gentleman who was just watching the bison was chased and thrown 25 feet in the air.
Launched into outer space.
It was really something to watch. And of course, if you are interested in anything that we have to share with you today, then you can look on the RVNavigator.com website for this episode, episode 256, or just click on the current link, and you will find all of the comments and links for today's podcast, as well as some pictures and things of some things we are going to talk about. Because even though we have been home due to the shoulder injury or the shoulder surgery that we just mentioned, we have been active and we have been doing things and thinking about camping. Well, only thinking about, but we haven't done. But we are making plans for the future. But on a regular basis, we've been having smoothies.
Something new for us. We got a good deal on a smoothie maker at Costco, and we thought we would give them a try.
We're not really smoothie people, but this looked like fun, and we've some of our folks on the Alaska Caravan talked about how much they enjoyed their smoothies, and they brought along smoothie makers. It's not exactly a Cuisinart. It's a different sort of machine.
It's a blender.
It's a blender, but it's more than
steroids.
Just a blender. Okay, a blender on steroids. We bought the Ninja brand, which seems to be a company that's making all sorts of small kitchen appliances. And it wasn't too expensive, and you just pour in a bunch of fun ingredients and press the button, and it whirs and buzzes and chops and makes it all into a smoothie, into one consistency drink. We've been making very interesting.
We're trying to find some that we both like.
Yes.
That's the real problem.
I'm not drinking anything green.
Yeah, that's problem number
one. Ours don't have kale or anything.
And he doesn't.
Would you drink green ones?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, because they say when you put in baby spinach, you don't even taste it because you've got other stuff in there. So you see the color, but you don't get the taste.
So, dear listener, we need
some. You see the problem.
We need some advice.
Some of us don't
here.
Like
are the green ones.
The seeds.
Do they
that
taste
are
like grass?
No.
They don't taste like grass?
That's what I've read, but I've never experienced it because we have to.
Because we've never had a green one.
Because we have to agree on the smoothie, I guess. Otherwise, you would have to rinse it out and start
over. Ours have been basically fruit smoothies.
Fruit ones. Blueberries. And
but you freeze all this stuff. And so one of the things I really do enjoy are in the summer,
cold
especially,
drinks,
are cold
drinks.
Cold
drinks, yeah.
And it makes quite a decent quantity. I mean, it makes two very large glasses.
And I find it quite filling,
which
is
good
for
breakfast. And we've been throwing in a protein shake and all sorts of other things. So
if you want to share some good recipes with us, we are still unsettled. Especially ones that aren't green.
Can we make a small one that's green?
Yeah, you can just put in a little bit of the ingredients.
Well,
but if I bag it, well, right now I'm not buying a bag of lettuce.
So what would you put in this green?
Spinach.
Oh, yeah. And?
Kale is also mentioned, but kale is a little harder to disguise, I think. So
really?
I would start with baby spinach.
Spinach isn't hard to disguise?
But right, no, because it'll just whip into nothingness. But right now I'm a little bit leery about leafy vegetables, period. So that may remain on hold for a while.
Oh, that is really a shame.
Heartbreaking, right?
I'm so disappointed that my smoothie won't have any kale.
Well, maybe you can buy frozen spinach, because we've been using frozen fruit.
Of course, I have this kind of anti-spinach attitude because my mother made terrible
Your mother
spinach.
Could have been a better cook,
that
way.
That was in a different time period. Well, dear listener, if you have some ideas about smoothies that you would like to share with us, and we could maybe even put up a page of recipes.
And put them in the RV or have them in your house, whatever works for
you. Do you have a smoothie
you.
Maker?
Some people have
Are we going to have them in the RV?
This
Can you buy a smaller? It's kind of big.
This one is big. Well, if you do a blender for one serving, you would just have to make twice.
You can buy them for just one?
They had them at Costco.
Sorry, I'm not a smoothie expert.
No.
I'm just learning.
Yes,
but this one is very powerful, and it makes a smoothie in about 45 seconds.
Yes, very quickly.
Or a minute.
This poor man has been busy learning how to cook in my absence, so we don't want to tax him too much. He's trying
hard. 6 weeks of me being full-time cook.
And not,
3 meals a day.
That's what you've done so far. I'm no better now.
So I have to continue?
I think so. I'm not any better.
I think we need to take a listener poll.
They're not inside this aching body.
Do I get to have a day off?
Yeah, you have a day off.
I have a day off.
We'll go out to a restaurant.
We really haven't been out very much at all, have we?
I can't cut my own meat.
This has been an unusual summer, to say the least.
Oh, this
RV navigators are locked into a house.
It's like COVID revisited.
We're becoming typical.
I don't want to be typical.
Yeah, well, it is anyway. So, one of our listeners asked us about, well, they know that we travel.
Or that we used to. And we have opinions.
And they asked us on a long trip, they were going on a long trip, what kind of suitcases do we use? And I have very strong feelings about this. So, I'm going to tell you that we use rolling duffels that are very specific. The ones we use have a hard side on the bottom so that you can put stuff in there that won't be crushed, but are basically fabric that have just two wheels, which I think is critical, and that they have two compartments. Now, when we think about duffel bags, you think about just kind of a lazy sort of bag that has no form. These are formed with this hard bottom.
Especially once you stuff them full of 50 pounds worth of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the thing that's changed, I think, is that the 50-pound limit has
really cramped my style.
Yes. So
I much prefer a hard-sided suitcase, but
yeah,
when
right.
25% of the allotted baggage weight is going into your suitcase, we look for the lightest, strongest thing we can find.
Well, and that's the thing about a rolling duffel, is that it is lightweight almost by nature. And I want to mention that we buy the 29 or 30-inch size, because if you buy a bigger one, you just put more stuff in it and you're too...
And then it's overweight.
And you want it to be fairly nicely filled so that it isn't stuff doesn't move around. So the 30-inch model is pretty good. And I like the ones... We used to be able to buy these at Costco from Fuel, F-U-L. But they no longer are sold at Costco. But the Fuel are just sold by Amazon. And it's a good brand and has a quality product as far as I can tell. Right now, though, I'm using an Amazon Basics one. And the thing that you need to consider is that it has two compartments. So it has an upper compartment and then some sort of a divider and then a lower compartment, which to me is critical because then I can put things that I'm going to be using immediately in the next few days on the top. So I put underwear and toiletries and socks and all those things that you're going to – maybe a pair of shoes or two. And so I can live out of the top of the suitcase for several days and underneath – the second compartment, which is totally independent, is other things, dressy things and jackets and rain pants and other assorted things. And, of course, here's where there's going to be a controversy. I put mine into packing cubes.
Which is very in right now. That's what a lot of people do.
Right. Not compression cubes.
But for organizational purposes.
For organizational purposes. I can pack and unpack my suitcase in a flash. I can take my underwear and just throw it right into a drawer in the packing cube. The packing cubes need to be very light, though. And this is another issue. As she kind of mentioned a minute ago, the suitcase itself needs to be light. And the rolling duffel is on the order of 8 pounds. 8.5, which is really a lot when you think about it, because you only get 50 pounds, so that's 16% of your weight is taken up just by the stupid suitcase. Whereas if you get, I was looking at hard-sided ones, and you're talking about 10, 12 pounds. So you could take a lot more stuff if you take a rolling duffel that is light or another suitcase that's light. But I like one that has a shape and that rolls nicely and that is big enough to hold 50 pounds. These are easily, well, you can put 50 pounds worth of stuff in them easily, make it pretty full. So what's your strategy? How do you pack?
Well, I've been doing this forever. I just use plastic bags and put most every garment in a separate plastic bag.
Whoa.
So I see what they are. They slide so I can take one out of the suitcase and not disturb everybody else who's already in the suitcase.
Do you like having the two compartments?
Basically, I put pants and shoes in the bottom one and shirts in the top one, basically.
So you don't pack for destinations?
No. Mm-hmm. No. Now, like when we were on a cruise at the end of a trip, I would put the cruise stuff in a bag because that would be something I really wouldn't want to get at until I got on the boat. So it got it out of the way.
Uh-huh.
But this other stuff I use whenever I think I need to use it. And I want to add that at the beginning with the duffel bags, I was a little worried that they would not be robust enough for all the abuse that we give them. But they hold up quite well, and we are able to get, what, 4... international trips out of a duffel?
It depends on how many flights. You know, if you're taking a cruise and you're going to be on the ship for 2 or 3 weeks,
then it doesn't get abused.
It doesn't
so much.
Get abused at all. But if you're on a land trip where you're changing hotels every 2 or 3 nights, it takes a beating, and you need to have one that's that will take it. And these overall, we have been pleased with the way these hold up. Mine has been on several trips and still is in good shape. The zippers don't break. And one of the things that I also like are the ones with straps that buckle so that it holds the zippers closed even if they were to accidentally pop open.
Right.
Although we have never had that happen.
And we put belts on them in addition.
Well, in case. We put a nylon strap around
just in
them.
Case.
But that's kind of for identification as much as for safety.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, if you are thinking about buying a suitcase, that would be our choice. We haven't used hard-sided suitcases in years, literally.
I miss them.
I would not consider going back to a hard-sided.
But it makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Plus the fact that if you're going on a cruise or something else similar, then you need one that goes... that your bags have to slip underneath the bed in order to store them away during the cruise.
Yeah.
And the duffels, because they're fabric on the top, they can easily...
You could take a hard-sided one and leave it open like a clamshell.
I think this is easier.
We used to do
this. You just kind of push it down. After the stuff is out of it, you just push it down and it slides underneath pretty easily. So that's our strategy. I hope you have a trip.
Good trip with your duffel bag.
With your duffel bag.
We're not jocks, per se. We do some sports for exercise, but otherwise we're not all that interested in sports. And Ken watches the Bears because they are our hometown team, but that's really about it. But certainly the World Cup games have caught our attention, even though
watched a soccer game.
We weren't really watching for it. They were just in the news all the time, and the deliriously happy crowds and people from all parts of the world... countries you hardly ever heard of, like Cape Verde, were in there pitching.
Yeah.
It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Made me want to go to a game.
And it made me think how good it was for my fellow countrymen who haven't been as lucky as I've been to visit many of these countries. I understand that only half of us own passports and only a quarter of us have ever used them to leave the country. So for many of us, the World Cup games were a nice introduction to all the wonderful people that there are in the rest of the world that we don't have a chance to see very often or know much about. It was very amusing to watch them fall in love with our ranch salad dressing.
And the fast food places.
And our huge grocery stores, like our beloved Costco that we've already mentioned twice so far. And it was nice to see that they were surprised at some of the things that we have that they had never considered. And to remember that we felt the same way when we visited other people's countries and saw that there are indeed many ways to do things. We don't have the right answer for everybody, for every occasion, but... people work it out for themselves, and it's fun to see how they do that.
And the United States has actually shown off very well. I think that people came over here, and they watched the news just like we watched the news from their countries, and much of it is negative. And they came over here and found the Americans to be friendly people, and they found that we have some interesting things to see and do. And it was nice to see tourists actually enjoying our country.
And everybody had so much fun, whether they won or they lost. It was really heartwarming to see. We kind of got the idea to talk about this a little bit from an article that we read, and we're going to, as we always do, put a link to it on the RV Navigator website page for this month if you want to read a more thorough exploration of the thoughts of what travel does to people and how it gets you out of your own comfort zone and makes you think about being a citizen of the world rather than just being a citizen of the United States.
And that everything in the United States is not great. I think we need to have perspective on that. We don't have a lock on the best of everything. Travelers are somebody who can come back and bring back good ideas and share good ideas with people overseas. A computer programmer generally knows more about programming than someone who has never written a code. A mechanic generally knows more about engines than someone who has never worked on one. People who have actually studied, practiced, and experienced something usually understand it better than people who have not. And then when I talk about travel, it's about the same thing. These experiences will broaden your horizons no matter who you are. And that's better for the world. And is it arrogant to think this way? Are we arrogant to think that because we've traveled and been to many countries that we are better? No, we're just taking in ideas and
from
sharing
everybody.
Them. Okay, off the soapbox and on to Starlink.
They're always doing something. Seems like we have to talk about them every month.
I really
month
don't
or two.
Mean to put Starlink in the notes in the podcast every month, but for God's sakes, they keep making changes. And they made some fairly substantial changes this month.
And campers depend on them.
Well, many have become dependent on it. I'm always shocked when people say, we're going to some sort of out-of-the-way place and we want to have internet. What are our choices? Well, there is only one. And, of course, because Starlink now has over 8,000 satellites in orbit, and they're continuously putting them up, as we see in Florida, that their coverage is becoming more and more. And we've found it on cruise ships to be good. So what's happened this month? Well, they have decided that if you are a home user, that you have to rent your dish.
Yes.
So they add $10 a month, and they give you the dish.
What if you already have a dish?
That hasn't changed. And so people like us who already have a dish
don't have to rent the dish.
This is not for roaming. This is, you know, these things will change by next month. But right now, if you are a roamer, such as us or any RVer, you can still buy it. And you can still buy it from third party, like Home Depot
or from
other places. And they will activate it. But if you buy it from Starlink, they're going to charge you $10 a month. But that saves you from having to buy the hardware, which is something that is maybe an issue.
Are the dishes fairly robust, or is it to your advantage if one breaks down that they have to do something about it, not you?
I find there's virtually no moving parts other than the connecting cable.
Right.
Which, if you plug it and unplug it enough, will probably break. But other than that, I don't hear about people actually having problems.
So that makes
with
no
them
difference.
Stopping working.
Owning them is not a big deal in terms of maintaining them.
So they have also introduced the V5, version 5 of the dish. We own version 4, and of course, a lot of people who are RVers own the Mini. V5, surprisingly enough, if you take a look at our website, I have a little picture that the V5 latest version is actually just slightly larger than the Mini.
Hmm.
And, of course, it has the capabilities of the much larger version 4, the Gen 4. So a lot of people say, well, I'm going to run out and buy V5, but unfortunately V5 does not work in motion. Or at least they're not activating it for in motion. So that's a problem. You can move it, but you can't use it while you're underway.
While you're moving.
And a lot of people, I'm surprised, they put it in the dash.
They navigate with it.
They put it on the roof.
Makes sense.
Underneath a skylight. And all of those things seem to work pretty well. We have never used ours in motion, but...
Why not?
Why not? I don't know why not. Maybe we should. I don't know. I could think about it, I guess. Where would I put it? In the dash, I guess. We could try it there. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, you may have a first-hand report on our next trip, which will be after Labor Day. But anyway.
Yet another Starlink item.
Yeah, the V5 is much lighter. It's more, my understanding, it's basically lighter than the Mini. And one of the reasons why the Mini is heavier is because it has the router built in. And that, to me, is an advantage. You don't want the router built in, I don't think, unless you are, well, unless you can guarantee that you can put it at some sort of close by to the RV every time you set it up.
Wasn't there something about if people stole it, they got the whole setup, too?
Like
if you have
it
on the roof of your car?
You would disable it right away. I would think that it's just
that's not a big deal.
If you are thinking of buying a Starlink
this month,
well, in actuality, I think I would wait because Elon showed off actually two dishes before his when he made this announcement. And there is going to be apparently a new Mini, which will even probably be even smaller. Nobody's seen it or has exactly knows what it's going to be, but I would definitely wait a while if you can. But V5 is, the version 5 is very viable. And they talk about it being slightly slower, 400 megabits versus 375 megabits.
You don't notice.
You don't notice that. That's, they're both very good and are much better than anything that you would find elsewhere. So, of course, the plans are basically the same. You the roaming plans start at 100 gigabytes and then 300 gigabytes and then unlimited so that you can choose how much data you're going to be using. I think we're going to give the 300 gigabyte plan a try. For $70, that's a pretty good deal.
I'm thinking that I'm in the deep woods and I have big dish where I'm trying to shoot through the trees versus a Mini. Is one of them better at that than the other?
The standard size dish that we have is definitely better.
Because,
but it is marginally, it's like 20% better.
Because it has more usable real
surface
estate
area
to
is,
reach
what,
the
is the way
satellite.
I would call it. I have not seen any real comparisons, the Mini versus the new one, the new standard dish, the version 5. And I assume that there's electronics and stuff built into it to make it more sophisticated. And the other thing that's happened is that because there are so many satellites in the sky now that it's easy to get a decent signal, no matter what the conditions are, and that all the dishes work well.
And he's still putting more up, is that true? Yeah.
When will
when will he be done?
12,000 satellites.
Oh.
There have been many developments in the satellite venue, too, because Starlink is putting up satellites at a very rapid pace, and they just launched their Starship, which is a much bigger rocket, and it is able to put up some 60 satellites at the same time, whereas the Falcon, which is what they use right now, only puts up 29, and they're the new version 3 satellites. So they're bigger and stronger. And so what they're doing is they're transforming from the earlier versions of the satellites to a new version of the satellites. And this new version is I don't know how much I want to get into this. The new version has cell phone capabilities.
Mm.
And they have a connection with T-Mobile to be offering direct-to-cell. So you can make calls now over Wi-Fi using Starlink, but this will be a direct connect to your cell phone, and apparently iPhones and other Androids have the capability even now. All they need are the satellites.
What does T-Mobile get out of it?
They're going to be selling you the plan.
Well,
I mean, the real deep rumor, you ready to get into the weeds on this? The real deep rumor is that Starlink has actually bought tons of bandwidth, and they'll be offering terrestrial cell service in competition with T-Mobile and Verizon. And,
yeah, they can do whatever they want.
AT&T. And it will be connected through satellites in addition to the cell towers so that you will have 100% connectivity no matter where you are without having any extra hardware.
And then they can be a monopoly.
Somebody writes, we are looking for a used motorhome and are so confused over gasoline versus diesel. It seems like gasoline would be so much simpler. Please offer your pros and cons on brands you love and hate. we're wanting to take a couple of long trips a year and several small trips. Thank you.
Ooh.
Of course, I have been a diesel advocate for quite a long time. And I would have to ask you, though, as a person who's thinking about buying one and understanding that we are basically diesel lovers. We love our diesel pusher, and I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
Is there a difference between new and used in terms of how you feel? Is one more robust than the other?
Well, I think the diesels are just much more robust. Uh-huh. They're looking for used, but they're confused over gasoline versus diesel. Gas is, of course, based on gas trucks, whereas the diesels are based on diesel trucks. But when you compare how many trucks on the road are diesel as opposed to how many are gas, that question becomes, why would you buy gas? Because no trucking company uses gas. They're all diesel. And that should be pretty much of a recommendation. And in terms of simplicity, as we have found, you'll find somebody to fix a diesel engine anywhere. And we found it in the middle of Alaska last summer.
Yes.
We had to have what we thought, well, it was a major repair, but it was a minor repair.
Minor expense.
It was reasonably priced. But anyway, you have to listen to last summer's podcast to find out about that. But the bottom line is that wherever you are, you can get your diesel engine fixed. And there's somebody who will come along on the road and fix it. So you don't have to fix it yourself. Simple? Well, a gas engine has to be serviced every 4,000 or 5,000 miles.
And they're always in the front, is that correct?
Yes.
Because I really like being able to speak with you while we are on the road.
And
road noise is loud enough. And then when you have
that
big engine right there between you, I would not like that at all.
Exactly.
And then when you go into the basement of the motorhome, the storage space is configured differently as well.
Exactly,
which
because
is another thing to think about.
Gasoline engines have to have a drive shaft that takes the power from the front and puts it at the back through a drive shaft, and that drive shaft has to have a tunnel. And that tunnel goes the complete length of your motorhome. And that is a definite weak point. Should you consider that a diesel pusher? That's a huge advantage to me. Plus the fact you have to think about diesel engines. Diesel engines are missing one of the three major systems that are on gasoline engines. So it has to have fuel and it has to have air, but it doesn't have ignition, because it uses self-ignition. So there are no spark plugs, there's no any sort of ignition electronic system for a diesel engine. So that to me makes them much simpler.
And this person said it seems like gas seems so much simpler. It doesn't really the case, is it?
Not to me.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that diesel pushers are truck-grade suspension and chassis, instead of being just a pickup truck type of thing. So that air suspension, which all diesel pusher or any good diesel pusher has, is head and shoulders above in terms of ride quality, and you're not pushed around the road. So all sorts of things make a huge difference when you switch to a diesel pusher.
And to me, when I think about owning and driving an RV that's bigger than what I would put in my garage, I think I need to bring some sort of tow vehicle or dinghy with me. And the diesels are so much stronger when it comes to towing things.
Exactly. And a diesel engine just doesn't say no. You go up hills, and the torque is just unbelievable compared to a gas engine. You know, with a gas engine, 400 cubic inch engine will have, in round numbers, the same number of foot-pounds of torque as the inches. Whereas a diesel, the same size diesel, ours is a 7.9 liter, and it has 1,200 foot-pounds of torque, which is at least twice as much as any gas engine, which in a motorhome you need to have that torque to get yourself up the hills and things. So to me, there's just no comparison.
And recently, diesel prices per gallon have definitely been higher than gas prices per gallon. But when we look at our much longer than your RVing history, that has not always been the case. And the miles per gallon, it's a little bit deceptive because a diesel gets, talk about the torque
Right.
That can push, can get a lot more miles per gallon.
Well, diesel engines, just because of what they are, they get about 30% better gas mileage.
So you have to figure that into the math.
For ours, and we've talked about this before, but ours gets about 8.3 miles per gallon over its entire life of 80,000 miles, whereas a 40-foot gas will get in the low sixes. So that's a huge difference when you're talking about price. And, of course, diesel is more expensive, but we have 150-gallon tanks, so we can go around and
look for the best deal.
Look for the best deals, and frequently it's less than what we're finding for the local gas prices. The other thing that a lot of people talk about is DEF, the diesel exhaust fluid. Since 2012 or so, 2010, there have been additions to the emissions control system called that uses a separate tank of fluid that is called DEF. And this tank, you get about 450 miles per gallon, and it's sprayed into the exhaust at the end of the cycle. And it keeps the particulates and the exhaust gases at low levels so that they will meet the standards that have been established. Now, what's interesting in this is that prior to this, we owned a 2004 Dutch Star, which was virtually the same as the one we have in terms of the engine. It had the very same engine in it. It was a lower horsepower, which is interesting. We now have a 450 horsepower, but the same size engine and the same exact components in that engine, same displacement. And my experience was is that this new one, which weighs substantially more than the old one, and has DEF, actually gets better gas mileage than the old one. So the cost of DEF fluid, DEF fluid, is mitigated by the offset in fuel savings. I find this engine drives better. I find this engine runs cooler. I find this engine runs 300 RPMs less at 65 miles an hour than the old one, so that it has less wear and tear. So to me, DEF is a real plus. And the reason why is because the emissions are taken care of after the combustion process, whereas the earlier one used exhaust gas recirculation, which meant that it took exhaust gas and recirculated it and caused it to be less efficient. It's just a matter of economics there. So what do I prefer? If you're asking me this question, dear listener, I prefer, and I think we prefer, the diesel for a number of reasons. Even the passenger's happy. Am I right?
Yes, definitely.
The passenger definitely likes this. So what would you do? Buy a diesel if you can afford it. Yeah. That's the problem.
That costs more.
Yes. It does cost us $600 or $700 for an oil change, but we only have to have an oil change every 20,000 miles.
Which is also a convenience.
So, yeah, a big convenience, I would say. We went round trip to Alaska and didn't have to have the oil changed. Several of our people actually made appointments for oil changes when they got to Alaska or when they were leaving Alaska, probably both, because they had to take their trucks in to have them serviced. And that's a pain in the butt while you're on the road. 20,000 miles, that's once a year maybe, or 20,000 miles or once a year, I guess. What should you do? Diesels definitely cost more, but are they worth it? Absolutely. And
we
if
think
you can
so.
Afford it, do it. So if you are, I'm explaining this to the navigator for the first time.
Yes.
I found a new app that is free that will solve many of your problems.
Really? It'll make my shoulder feel better?
No, not those problems. Your electric. Yes. Buy this app and it will fix your shoulder. No, it's going to fix your electronic problems, which you're always questioning me about. Because this app is called What Cable?
Oh, yes. That is
now,
a problem.
It's hard to believe, but as we transition to USB-C cables, well, probably any cables, but if you plug into a USB-C cable, there are different capacities for each cable. And that if you go to Walmart and you buy the cheapest cable you can get,
or one that's a cute color.
Yeah. It probably is only a charging cable. So how do you know which cables do what? These days, you can charge your laptop using USB-C. You can run your Starlink using USB-C if, what?
They have,
you have the right cable.
The capacity.
If it has the capacity, exactly. So how do you know which cables will do the job that you want them to do?
Trial and error.
No! No.
It doesn't work very well, I'll say that.
Thank you. And you harass your husband mercifully. So, ladies and gentlemen, you get the free app called What Cable, and you plug in your cable into the port on your computer or on...
So you put the app on the thing you want to put the cable into.
Well, you could just put it on your laptop and plug in any cable and test it.
And
you
know,
you could, then you could use the cable where... But you'll know then what that cable is capable of doing.
And how will it tell me? How will the information come to me?
It comes to you on the screen.
But what?
Well, it tells you that this is capable of 25 watts of charging.
Yeah, that's not very good.
Well, that's... And it tells you whether it's a data cable...
That would be good.
...and a charging cable.
That would be good.
All data cables are charging cables, but all card charging cables are not. And it'll tell you how much capacity it has to charge your devices.
But I don't relate to watts very well. I like the first choice better. Okay, carry on.
Well, dear listener, I would suggest that you take a look at this. Well, it's free. Take a look at it.
I will.
And it might just help you.
I have a rat's nest of cables.
I know. That's the problem.
Well, and because
and
I
then
have
you plug in and you say, this cable is not working. Well, that's because it's not a data cable.
No, what I say is it was working at home, but it's not working here.
Or you also complain about that it charges slowly.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Because
it's not a very big wire.
And I think that's because I have a lot of old cables. And in olden times, you didn't need as much charging capacity and data capacity as we require today.
I have a little picture there of what you see.
Okay.
Last but not least this month, we're going to fix the portrait versus landscape problem. Why on earth do all people who use their phones take pictures in the portrait mode?
Vertically.
Vertically, instead of landscape. Nobody knows. When you look at something, you see it wide, not high.
It's easier to hold your phone.
I always take my pictures wide.
Yes, I do too.
And I don't know why people insist.
Because it's easier to hold it.
Easier to hold it?
Yeah.
You can't hold it vertically?
Not when your shoulder is broken. No, you cannot.
Oh, boy. Talk about lazy. Oops, I don't want to make any comments. But guess what? The problem might be fixed because in the new iPhone, this is unbelievable.
And the Android, too.
And the Android already has this, apparently.
Yeah. The Android's is called Uncrop. After all, we have two eyes mounted horizontally on our faces. Our view of the world is wide, horizontal. Movie cameras, movie screens, TV screens, computer screens are horizontal for the same reason. And yet everybody takes their picture vertically. But then that's the fault of the iPhone, the number one used camera on Earth. So that has changed everything. But the pictures are not very satisfactory when you are trying to do a scene or a video of a scene also.
TV stations have really, or TV channels have really come to grips with this because they now have the letterbox or the spaces on the edges where they have fuzzy versions
thing,
of the video.
Yeah, this says most people use two hands to hold the phone horizontally, which is a huge psychological and physical barrier. Whatever you think,
so
that's what they do.
We want RV Navigator listeners to reform and start taking your pictures horizontally.
But you don't have to because you can take a picture vertically and then fix it later.
In September, when OS 27 comes out on the 1.5 billion iPhones, they will include an extend button in the Photos app that is going to add stuff to your pictures.
To the sides of your
picture. To the sides of your
picture. To make it a horizontal picture. And you're going to put these samples on the webpage, right?
So I'm going to.
See it. It's amazing.
Unfortunately, some people who are using this feature right now have found that, yes, it fills in the edges, but it fills in stuff that you wouldn't expect. Like, here's a picture of a couple, and it added a man on the right-hand side. the horizontal. So they maybe have a little bit of extra work to go through to make this happen. But that's
going
to be
a choice.
That's going to be a cool feature for us to experiment with when we come out with that'll be next month probably. OS 27. I'm going to try the beta soon.
Good.
And if you'd like to try the beta, you can too. It's available currently for the iPhone or the iPhone users and probably iPad users that want to experiment with what's going to be coming full-time on the Apple System 27. All right. We have once again outlived the rain.
Hopefully that
the rain is about over. The sun is going to come out.
Hopefully that wasn't too loud.
We will be done with the podcast for a month. Where will we be next month? We will be right here, where we will be recovering from shoulder surgery.
Yet again.
I will be cooking, and I will be making smoothies.
Yet again. We'll,
the typical life of a RV Navigator has been disrupted, but we are hopeful that we'll be
making the best of it.
So, dear listener, let us know what you're thinking. We've given you several topics that you might want to let us know what you're doing.
And let us know what you've been doing this summer, how you've been enjoying the great outdoors
and what
that we
should
have
be
not
doing.
Been in.
Yes. We will see you in the next month. Bye for now.
Happy travels.
Yeah.